This is CliffCentral.com.
It's the Bieber with Chance the Rapper, Quavo, and DJ Khaled. I'm the one. I like this. Apparently, Jonty's interviewing someone who paints with their genitals. Isn't that exciting?
Picasso, or is there a new...
I don't know.
New painter on the block.
Naked yoga is what they're talking about on Sex Talk today. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah, it's a big deal, that naked yoga.
It is. It really is. And then... someone sent me this, Leighton sent me this picture of like a conversation that they were having. You guys infiltrate every part of my life. Have a good weekend. Catch you in the podcasts. That's from Leighton. And then there's this conversation between Leighton and someone else. And they use the line billions and billions and billions.
And billions and billions and billions and
billions and billions. That's the one. That's what I'm talking about. So... I don't know if you know what the Lunchbox Fund is, but the Lunchbox Fund was founded in 2005, and it provides one meal each day to 13,000 underprivileged, orphaned, and at-risk school kids, totaling more than 2.6 million meals a year. Now, that is a massive amount of work, and the Lunchbox Fund began through a trip that somebody who we're about to meet took to Soweto once. The much-needed sustenance provided by the Lunchbox Fund encourages kids to stay in school with a risk of HIV infection, abuse, and unwanted pregnancies much reduced. And I'm very happy to meet this morning Topaz Page Green, who I looked you up yesterday, actually.
Thank you.
Yeah, I looked you up because I thought, who is this that Sia's booked in here? This Lunchbox Fund. I was expecting like some do-gooder, social worker, you know, that kind of thing. And... then we Google imaged you, and it's just pictures of you with all these famous people.
Oh, gosh. That's awkward.
No, it's not. No. So I had no idea, but you really do. You kind of hobnob with the elite one day, and then you're doing this amazing work in Soweto the next. It seems to me to be a very interesting life that you're leading.
Well, one thing that is fantastic is that actually I'm proud to say we're feeding 20,000 children a day.
20? Wow.
And we... are going to be at 25,000 kids a day by the end of the year. And it's very important work, and I don't think of it as hobnobbing.
No, you know what I mean.
Yeah, no,
pictures on the internet.
Yeah.
Don't get all embarrassed and coy with me. So I'm interested in you, before we talk about the Lunchbox Fund, because clearly that's something that is doing enormously good work and is helping a lot of 20,000. I'm sorry, the last count I had was 13, so you've gone up by 7,000 people. That's no small feat, and we'll talk about that in a second. But where are you from? What's your story?
I am born and raised in Johannesburg, outside of Honeydew, and I absolutely am passionate about South Africa. And after high school, I went on a trip to London, which took me to New York. And I ended up falling in love with someone in New York, which had me staying there longer than I thought I would be there. And it was on a trip back visiting South Africa from New York with the person who I was with at the time that I visited schools in a way that I hadn't visited schools when I was in school in South Africa. Mm. And that was when I was met with the gravity of the situation that the kids faced there on a daily level. Mm-hmm. And it was really apparent that the kids in the schools that we were at were hungry. It was visible. You could see it on their faces. But they were also the most happy, lively, beautiful kids that I'd ever seen. And it was something that I couldn't walk away from. And that was the moment that we started the Lunchbox Fund.
First of all, it sometimes does take having to leave a country and come back to be able to see it objectively, right? Because when you were here at school in South Africa, you didn't think of people in other schools and them being hungry or any of that stuff. And then when you come back, you look at it with fresh eyes.
I think when you come back, you have objectivity that you didn't have when you're subjective in the situation. And I was also a school kid, and you... are taught about social responsibility in school, but you experience it as a kid in school. So it did take me going out and coming back to feel things more viscerally.
Well, we have in this country a huge program of feeding schemes for school kids and all the rest of it, because it's been researched over and over by a number of really, really smart people all over the world who have research in education as their kind of focus. And they've all said that if you're hungry, you can't learn.
I think it's...
There's no point in going to school if you're hungry.
It's fundamental and it's biological, and food is the building block of absolutely anything that any of us will and can become. You know, it's...
So you used to model?
Oh, gosh.
No, but I'm curious. Don't be shy about this stuff. I'm interested in what your background is.
Yeah, it's not...
Because models usually don't care about food at all.
It's one thing that I've always sort of been embarrassed about.
Why?
I don't know. I just...
Yeah, there are thousands of people who've done very well from it and made a good living out of it, and it's nothing to be embarrassed about. And if you're good looking enough to make it as a model, there's nothing that you should be ashamed of.
No, and you know, and they love doing it, but for me, it's just never been something that I've particularly felt
comfortable in. Is that maybe because of the stereotypes around it and the fact that people assume less of you when they find out that you're a model and you can't have the conversations that you want to have because they immediately make determinations about you?
You know, maybe they make assumptions and maybe they don't. I think I was always in my own head about it, and there was always other things that I wanted to be doing that to me personally felt that they were more in alignment with what my purpose here on planet Earth is in this round. And so I just felt uncomfortable. That's not to say that it's not a wonderful vehicle for, you know, many, many people.
And I mean, it's turned into incredible careers for some of these women and men.
And they're able to use it to do wonderful things for social causes as well. I just liked to focus on what I was doing singularly without
baggage.
Baggage, yes. But it did provide me with a green card in the U.S., and so I am grateful for the service that it provided.
Are you still in New York? Do you still live there?
I live in New York, but I am in Johannesburg every 3 months.
Okay, and doing work with the Lunchbox Fund, obviously.
Absolutely.
So, all right, how did this whole thing, how did you start thinking you could make a difference? Because everybody looks at a problem and they go, well, these thousands of children who don't have a meal. And well, what can I do? Well, I can go there one day a year and I can maybe help out and maybe I can buy them this many. But I can't sustain that. And one person can't make this happen. So how did you even tackle this monster?
Well, I think the key, and our managing director, Sue Wildish, is here.
Hey, Sue.
I think the key is... Don't think it's
so. You don't have to be quiet. That people want to know you exist. That we aren't making up your presence.
I am real, and hello, I'm here.
Right.
But the key is not thinking of something as an insurmountable monster, because then no one's ever going to do anything. But look at something as a task and start small, and that's what we did. We started feeding 100 children, and not looking at the greater crevice of need, and now we're at 25,000 children by the end of the year, and our intention is to be feeding 100,000 kids a day by 2020 and ultimately filling the gap that isn't met by government.
I'd love there to be a situation in South Africa where the parents themselves could afford to feed their own children and where people had sustainable jobs and where schools were equipped well, and you know, there's all that kind of thing. But in the meantime, it's a noble thing that there are people stepping in and filling in the gap. However, how does it fund itself? How does it sustain? Because that's a huge amount of expenditure. Sue, you want to hop in here too? Because raising money for even a really good cause is really difficult, particularly in this country, in this economy, and internationally. How do you do it?
Well, we all do it together. We have a benefit every year in New York, which Topaz runs and manages, and that raises the bulk of the funds that we use to actually provide food. And then we're so fortunate we have a benefactor, a donor, who provides all of our operational costs. So all of that is covered. We know it's covered. We don't have to worry about that. We're a lean, mean team, so we make sure we keep the operational costs
low. Last thing you want is to be one of those organizations where your operational costs are sky high and you can actually do very little work on the ground, right?
Absolutely. So we can tell people, you know, we can promise people every single cent that you donate to us goes towards the provision of a meal. Doesn't go anywhere else. Just that. So, you know, that's part of what we do, but it's ongoing work, yeah. You know,
it's hard work. How do you persuade people in New York to care about kids in South Africa?
I think I'm very passionate, and I think passion is infectious. So, and I also think that
you just harass them nonstop.
I do harass nonstop. There's a thing called the word no doesn't exist in my vocabulary. Uh-huh. I go, what do you mean no? So you mean there's a chance, right?
No means there's a chance. I'll start adopting that more.
No means there's flexibility to speak.
So who do you target when you do you invite people to the benefit? Do you just put out an invitation and hope that people will come? Do you target certain people?
The benefit is invite only, and it's quite small. We usually do events that don't feel they feel intimate, and this year we have Emma Stone and Olivia Wilde.
I love Olivia Wilde.
She's amazing.
How much do I have to pay to meet Olivia Wilde? I'll help the lunchbox fund. God, she's beautiful and she's so cool.
Yeah, she's super
cool. She comes from this really interesting family. She had these two parents who are literary greats. They mixed with people like Christopher Hitchens and the editor of Vanity Fair, and they're just the most incredible family.
Yeah, and she is a wonderful young lady. Tickets start at $1,500 a pop.
Shit. Okay.
Change of heart there, Gareth.
But it's a really good night, and it's fun. People enjoy themselves. We have the issue of people not leaving rather than people leaving early because they're bored. So we like to make a fun event that feels good, that's really focused on the charity. And there isn't anyone who can't relate to a hungry child. And, you know, most people are parents themselves. And the idea of not being able to put a plate of food on your child's table or in their lunchbox is debilitating. So it's something that is universally relatable.
What do you put in the lunchbox? I mean, because this, you know, you could get criticism for this. The amazing thing is, no matter how much good work you do, there's always someone somewhere who's going to criticize you and go,
always.
Oh, not enough potassium in that diet. And you're thinking, well, what the hell? You're not doing anything.
The lunchbox itself is actually a big cardboard box of products that or provisions that are all fortified where they can be, that are delivered to the school along with a menu, and then the school makes the food hot every day.
Okay.
So, you know, it's samp and beans, rice and lentils, there's maize meal, there's porridge, there's peanut butter, there's a Vita drink, Vita milk, and gravy mix. So all of that goes together in a box to the school, and they get it once a month, and then the school cook it up, and their responsibility to us is to serve it hot, to serve it every day, to serve it only to kids, and they have to add vegetables at least 3 times a week. So that encourages people to go out and buy in their local community, so that benefits the community as well.
Have you seen how thin CA is? Would you think of sending us a lunchbox every day for him?
Oh my goodness!
We can actually send you a box because the food is delicious.
So, guys, thank you very much. Please don't go down the street.
We are a charity too. Look at Sia. He's too thin. I mean, it's ridiculous. I'm amazed, though, when Sia did, he said to me, "Ooh, wow, look at the," because he was the one who was Googling you, right? So he found all these pictures. So you come on, you know these people. You know, like Olivia Wilde, you just mentioned, Emma Stone. Do you approach them directly and say, "Hey, I need your help with this lunchbox fun thing"?
Yes. And
they say, sure, Topaz, no problem. Put down the phone and then they pitch.
I mean, hopefully. People do tend to pitch. But I think...
But New York is like that, right? I mean, everybody is... They all live in really close quarters. You walk down the street and you will see people you know. That's how the city is. So it's not odd for South Africans... You know, stuck in four ways. They don't know. They don't know that that's what happens in New York. It doesn't. You don't have to be the richest, most famous, most important person in the city to know everybody. It kind of works like that.
It, yeah, I mean, it can do. And at the end of the day, it's a little island. You know, there are 7 million people jammed in it, but it is an island after all. So you do tend to overlap with people, and the 7 degrees of separation just invariably gets narrower the longer that you're there.
So in New York, the rest of the time that you're there, what are you up to at the moment?
I
administer this from there.
It's always a matter of seeking funding, grants, raising money in one way or another.
Have you ever had people when they see you walk up the steps and they go, "Oh,
run
God,
the other
she's
dick,
here. She's
run,
here to
duck
ask
up
for more money."
Yeah, I'm sure that people understand that when I suggest we meet for a lunch or a coffee or tea, they know what's coming.
You need to get out of here.
Yeah.
So I'm interested. You were apparently just traveling on the London Underground and someone spotted you. And they said, "Oh, do you want to be a model?"
Oh.
Stop being embarrassed about this.
Do you know why?
I'll tell you why.
I wish that happened to me.
All right. If you're born looking like Quasimodo, like me, this doesn't happen to you. This is why I'm fascinated, all right? So you're just riding on the Underground. You're going from A to B and someone comes up to you and goes, "You should be on the cover of magazines."
It was odd, but it actually ended up being very lucky because I was leaving London and I was trying to find a way to get to New York, but it was actually very impossible to be there from the getting an permission to work standpoint. And while I was on the subway going to pick up my ticket, paper tickets in those days that you had to collect from the travel agency, dating myself, someone approached me in London and said, "Would you do this thing?" And I said, "Well, you know, thanks for the message, but I'm on my way to New York." And when I was in New York, I fell in love with the energy of the place and thought, "Gosh, I have to stay here a little longer. I have to find a way." And then realized that the person who had approached me on the train in London could actually provide the
ability
to be there.
Sure.
So that's how it sort of became an accepted offer.
And I'm quite interested in what you studied because you were at the Gallatin School of Individualized Study, which sounds really, really intense. But you studied Africa, you studied sociology and human rights.
Yes.
I mean, that's a hell of a combination.
It's this great school at NYU where you basically design your own degree. So I've sort of always been an outside-the-box type person and have never really managed to fit into being told this is your degree and this is what it has to look like. So a school where you could tinker-tailor that to suit your personal self.
That's cool.
Was great, yeah.
And what was your, apart from being from Africa and the stuff that you're doing here now, have you ever applied any of this stuff anywhere?
I think that the stuff that I learned was definitely fulfilling and enriching and applicable to the work that we do at the Lunchbox Fund. And it was just eye-opening in a global sense because, you know, a lot of the human rights issues that we were studying were global.
I'm also interested, you apparently built this app. Like, this was ahead of the curve in so many ways because most
people
were...
It really was.
Yeah, long before everybody else started doing apps.
Long before we did. And actually, we were proud to be the first foodie philanthropy app ever in existence. And we were ahead of the curve. So there is a...
It's called Feedy, right?
Yeah, it's called Feedy. And being ahead of the curve sometimes means that you have to wait for the curve to catch up to you.
Oh, so tell me about it. Sitting here waiting, twiddling my thumbs, growing a gray beard.
You know, and the app did very well, and it worked on an Instagram principle where you take a photograph of your... People take photographs of everything, particularly of meals, and they're posting these things by the billion on Instagram. And we thought, what if we could capture those food images and have them become actual meals for kids, which we did by having restaurants enroll in our app, pay a subscription fee, and every photograph that was taken at that restaurant of a meal would deduct the cost of a meal from their subscription fee. So it turned out that a photograph of a meal, therefore translated to a meal to a kid. And it was brilliant and fantastic. And we are still currently looking for a corporate partner who will give us the operational leverage that we need to keep this going and take it. It has potential to be a background running fund source for the charity.
Sure.
If anyone...
Scalable.
It's very... Yeah.
It's terrific. That's really smart thing. Global. Right, quite right. Okay, so a couple other things, see, I found out about you.
Oh, boy.
Apparently, you do pottery.
Oh,
true?
True.
Okay. You practice yoga.
How does that even start?
Whenever
someone mentions pottery, I think of that scene in Ghost. So I'm,
classic.
So I'm just picturing you on a Sunday morning.
And I have a flame in my heart for Patrick Swayze.
But do you have one of those wheels and everything?
I don't have a wheel. I would practice.
You got a kiln.
I don't have any personal studio, but I would practice at a retirement place in New York.
What, with a bunch of old people?
That was wonderful people.
Are you hanging around with a bunch of old people like Ben?
Really wonderful people with purple hair and sort of creative types. But yeah, I've always loved pottery. It was something that my dad did, and I know it sounds very, you imagine very quirky people doing it, and I am quirky. So
true or false yoga?
Ashtanga yoga, true.
What's Ashtanga yoga?
It's just a little bit more rigorous.
Oh. Is that true? So you walk out of there feeling like you've done 3 hours of running?
Yes.
God. All right. That sounds horrible. But obviously, it's good for you. I mean, you know, they say that this yoga is the best way to stop yourself from aging.
It's very balancing. Sue does it too.
I'm actually 150 years old.
You look fantastic for 150. My God, please, you got to show us this Ashtanga yoga. All right, vegetarian?
Vegan.
Vegan. That's
absolutely
very difficult to do.
It's very easy to do.
That means if an animal sneezes on something, you're not allowed to have it. Right?
Yes, it means you gather up the sneeze droplets and you put them in a bottle and pat them.
Now, if you're putting together the lunch boxes, do you insist that they also contain no animal products?
Well, actually,
or you're not going to force yourself on other people.
Well, it's a little bit of both, but we do have a milk powder and a milk product in our lunchboxes. Mm-hmm. And actually, as a matter of hygiene, and despite my personal ethics and morals, non-animal products is what is safe to deliver to kids long distance in heat and so on and so forth. So it works out lucky for me that I don't have to impose my ethics. They just happen organically.
Well, it keeps you also clean, then you're doing this good work, and at the same time you're spreading your own idea. I mean, veganism, I think there's a lot of merit there, and we've had arguments about this before, but one of the biggest reasons that we sit with the problems that we do with CO2 levels in the air and greenhouse effect and all the rest of it and climate change, and if you want to believe Al Gore even more, is because of animals that we're farming unnecessarily for just an outrageous abundance of meat.
100%. Absolutely,
yeah, I agree. You know, and also the thing is that our program has to be sustainable. If you start looking at delivering meat and what have you, you have to have all kinds of refrigeration trucks. You've got to make sure that everything is taken care of. And on the other end, the kids that we work with in the schools we work with, they don't necessarily even have electricity. So we had to make a product, an offering that ticked all the boxes, gave them everything they needed, but didn't require the addition of a complex protein like meat.
Well, and also their health considerations. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't afford to have kids getting sick because there's an off product that you
I think
you
a hideous with. Bout of salmonella would really do us in. Yeah,
that would be terrible. All right. Also, cycling. I know everything about you.
Cycling. Where did that come from?
Cycle throughout the city.
Oh, definitely.
Yes. Okay, well, that's just a way to get around.
Why in New York, do I seem like such a stalker now?
Yes. In New York, they call that. In New York, they call that transport. All right, and then you have a female cat called Fred.
Oh, Fred. Oh, Fred. Yes, she. And actually, she appears in Salman Rushdie's new novel, The Golden House. If you read his new novel, which is excellent,
yes,
Fred has an appearance. She does not have the name Fred, but it is her.
It's based on her. So you know Salman Rushdie.
Salman Rushdie is on our advisory board, and he is a huge proponent of our work. Yes.
What a superb guy!
He's a wonderful
I'm such
person.
A fan, and if you can organize for me to talk to him, I would be eternally grateful. I'll even come to that benefit so I can meet Olivia Wilde and give you the $1,500. No, that's terrific. That's really cool.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
what a brave man.
He wants to visit the work that we're doing. And
good.
When he does, he will quite possibly come and talk to you too.
You do know a lot of interesting people. You yourself are interesting. You see why I wanted to talk to you?
Thank you.
Yeah. And Sue, congrats on all the good work that the Lunchbox Fund are doing.
Thank you.
We appreciate that. I mean, a lot of people say, you know, that this should be government's responsibility or it should be other people's thing. I just have such admiration for people who pick up other people's situations and try to improve them. And it's hard work, I'm sure. There's a lot of it that is not particularly exciting or glamorous or easy to do. And some of it must be very, very backbreaking.
But,
good for you.
Some of it is very sad too, you know, because the amount of need out there is just almost immeasurable. We've got at the moment 10,000 children on our wait list.
You can't help.
We will find a way. We find ways to do these things. And, you know, the government does an excellent job with the National School Nutrition Program. They feed children that are at school. But there are kids that they can't reach, and we want to reach those kids. You know, we're reaching those kids right now. We're preparing them for school. So, it's hard work. It's tiring work, and it's sometimes sad work, but it's great work, you know. And it's the best work. I'm just as passionate as Topaz is about it. We really love what we do, and we want to keep doing it.
Please don't stop. Thank you both very, very much, ladies. It was an absolute pleasure to meet you, and thanks for spending some time with us this Friday.
Thank you.
I hope it's not all work for you all the time.
I would just like to say that anyone who would like to donate, do know that 100% of every cent that you give goes to feeding kids and putting a meal. We can promise you that, and you know where to find us. And just go to www.thelunchboxfund.org and make a donation. You ain't got nothing to lose.
There we go.
R2.50 buys a meal. R2.50.
That's all.
That's it.
I can't think of anything in the shops that costs R2.50.
Good and karma. Enough,
and that's to feed a child. That's amazing.
A meal all right. For a day.
Go ahead and do something good this morning. Don't be such a selfish asshole. All right. There we go.
Thank
it's
you.
25
Thanks,
minutes
guys.
To 9. Recorded this. What was your inspiration? There we go. Exactly. Amanda, you were there when he recorded this. What do you remember of the occasion? It must have been very, very special when Sia went into the studio and did that recording, wasn't it?
It was fabulous. I'd never heard anything so
Frank
like
Ocean.
That.
Frank Ocean was so pleased.
My inspiration was a drunk Pikachu.
That's fantastic, Sia.
That's also what you sound like when you have marshmallows for breakfast, Gareth.
Yes. I'm going to give Sia a handful of granola just now, just so that he doesn't pass out. Okay.
He's feeding me like a little animal in the zoo every now and then.
Lots of movies up this weekend. Someone told me I'm going to go and see Dunkirk, and then Sia reminded us that Baby Driver premieres today, as well as the movie Krakoa. And I said earlier that we interviewed Roberta Durant, who's the director of that movie, and we'll play that out probably next week sometime. But if you do have a chance to go and see Krakoa, and I do believe we've got to support local cinema, not out of any feeling of like, oh, shame, let's support. There's some good stuff being produced here, and just because it isn't Fast and the Furious 28 doesn't mean that it won't move you and won't make you think. Now, a lot of people who are huge activists on social media, they've all got something to say about the history of South Africa and, you know, this and that, and they're getting outraged by everything. How about you learn some history? I'm not obviously talking to our audience. They're smart people. But if you see someone, in fact, anyone who gets outraged on Twitter this weekend, I'm going to just reply, go and see Krakoa. Just because here's the story of a woman. First of all, a woman in the 1650s and a lot of stories about women that get told from that time. Second of all, it's a coy woman who was partly in the Dutch camp. She married a Dutch doctor and partly in the Khoi camp because she was a translator, although her own people turned against her at a certain point. And then the Dutch eventually turned against her too. And she ended up dying on Robben Island. I mean, it's a fascinating story and a part of all of our shared history. You know, Casper de Vries is descended from Kretoa. She's a nine greats grandmother of his.
Crazy.
And this is a thing, like about so many people, white people who think that they're white, but they have a black ancestor somewhere in their past.
We're all swirly.
Exactly. And black people, you've got white ancestors.
We're all down with the swirl. That's what we need to accept.
There was a woman who I'm descended from called someone from Bengal. What was her name? She's an Indian woman. She was brought here
Indian
as a slave.
As well.
Yeah, also
and someone from Jamaica.
In the late 1600s, she was an Indian slave. Katrina van Bengal.
Oh.
And the Dutch called her that. Her name was obviously Catherine or some kind of derivation of that. Mm-hmm. And then she was brought here from India, from Bengal, which is near Bangladesh now. And she married a white dude. And through my Afrikaans side of my family, I'm descended from her. If you bother to find these things out, it gives you a whole lot less reason to be so precious about your identity and your race. I mean, who cares, right?
Mm.
Really and truly. It's just learn a little. Go and watch Kretoa this weekend.
Speaking of movies, did you hear why Angelina Jolie's now in trouble?
Is she...
Angelina Jolie's in trouble?
Is she casting children to act or be in her actual family?
What?
Because I heard if you're in her movies, you're now her child.
Oh, is that the case?
You hot?
What has she done?
Both my sources are reliable.
What has she done?
So she has directed a new movie called First They Killed My Father, which is based...
That's not true. Her father's still alive and well, and he was just in a movie the other day. Oh.
It's a movie.
Oh, okay. I thought that you said documentary.
Yeah, it's based in the 70s in Cambodia.
What's her father's name?
John Voight.
John Voight.
Is that not Jennifer Aniston's?
No, John Voight. John Voight. Is he allowed to see their kids? Remember, there was a time where she didn't want him near the kids. She thought he was a bad influence.
No, I think that was Jennifer Aniston.
No. John Voight also wasn't, yeah.
She also doesn't want Jennifer Aniston.
And he was stupid enough to go to the media to speak about it. But anyway.
Yeah, that's right.
So this new movie is based on and intended to raise awareness around the mass killings in Cambodia back in the 70s. And so, you know, Angelina being like this Mother Earth, Mother Nature person, she wanted to get authentic kids and, you know, authentic feelings in the movie. So she had this audition process where she didn't even cast actors, but she went out into rural villages to get kids.
Yeah.
And on film, well, on the audition tape, what she basically made the kids do is she would sit one-on-one with a kid and give them money. And this kid would be all like excited, you know, to get money. And she'd say like, what do you want to do with the money? And so these kids would say, you know, my father's sick or we don't have any food at home and, you know, we'll make our lives better. And then she'd get the director to snatch the money away from them and the director chase them around the room.
And then they would cry.
Of course. So she said she wanted...
She's tormenting these children for a fucking movie. Are you kidding me?
She said she wanted to evoke natural feelings from the kids. But everyone is now like, listen here, you little Mother Nature, Mother Earth woman. This is a no-go zone.
That's horrible. What do you do that to children for?
Oh, well.
That is mean. But I am interested in Cambodia. You know, they call it Kampuchea as well. And that's a fascinating country. I would love to go to Cambodia. Kampuchea, yeah. And they've got Angkor Wat there, which is that old forest temple that you often see in postcards. Those carved stone heads with the trees growing in the background. And this huge series of temple sites, ancient temple sites, that the Khmer Empire put up. Look up Angkor Wat and you'll see what I mean.
So part of my ignorance, this is where...
In Indochina.
This is where Tomb Raider was shot, right? The Lara Croft movies.
They might have been. I didn't see Tomb Raider. I know Angkor Wat, but I don't know Tomb Raider. Anyway, yeah, and then they had that horrible situation in the 70s with Pol Pot. Pol Pot was the Khmer Rouge. They borrowed the first part of that. And the Khmer Rouge regime was just the most awful, hideous, genocidal disaster. Just hundreds of thousands of people who were killed in a disgusting ethnic cleansing killing field situation, and this Pol Pot was one of the most despicable people in human history. And then, of course, they're right next door to Vietnam, so during the Vietnamese War, they had a whole lot of other considerations, and it's just it's an interesting country. I would like to go to Cambodia.
What are the landmines like now? Aren't they like...
I think they still blow people up.
Yeah.
You mean, what are they like?
Well,
they're horrible.
Has it been cleared? Hasn't it been cleared yet after all of these years?
There's still some. It's like Mozambique. You still find some. You know, not every square meter gets cleared, so you don't know.
See, now unfortunately, if Princess Diana was still alive, there'd be no landmines because that was her job.
Right.
And then she, so.
Oh, yeah. She just had to ruin things by dying, didn't she?
That was her job. Her job was to leave the house in the morning and clear the mines. And
look what's happened. Now, there's still mines because she didn't finish the job.
Folks, are we really?
Amanda's just disgusted. What are you looking at us like that for? Do you even know?
Is it her fault that she died? No, guys, no.
Thank you. All right. Classing things up here. Do you want to?
Well, this has been a very unusual Friday. Justice Malala, you know, we don't normally have him on a Friday. What are you doing this weekend, Ben?
Well, Gareth, tomorrow I'm going to Ellis Park, and I'm so excited about this because Ellis Park is like, it's such a rush to the senses. It really is. Like, at a full crowd, it's going to be very, very special. And then Sunday, I'm checking in on a friend's cat.
Oh, what do you mean?
Well, he's going away, so I need to check in on the cats to see if they're right.
Uh-huh.
And post that, I obviously really want to watch Usain Bolt's final race. So I'm watching lots of athletics.
So it's sport and cats.
Sport and cats.
Wow.
That's all I got at the moment. Hopefully going to get my drone back quite soon. So I got the quote back. I need to follow up on when it's going to be finished.
It's going to cost you a fortune.
It's going to cost me more than I want to pay, Gareth, but this is part of the process. And I've actually got lots of editing to do. I've got all this great footage that I still haven't edited from Transky. I'm actually making a video today just about dolphins.
By the way, I just want to say that the footage, it's not often I find reasons to say nice things about Ben, but he recorded and edited some of the most incredible stuff I've seen. Those dolphins, it looks like a National Geographic special. Yeah. It looks like he was in a helicopter hanging out of the side with an HD camera. It's an impossible number of dolphins. I had no idea.
Crazy. So I've got about 7 clips I'm trying to put together into like a power sort of 2-minute video.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping
What's the channel on YouTube?
The Bounce.
Go to
my videos.
Do yourself a favor. Again, I don't find a lot of reasons to be nice about Ben, but please go and look at this video. It is majestic. The hole in the wall, the scenery, it looks like it should be an ad. It's that good.
Thanks, Gareth. It is that special of a place, but I've been wanting to find time to now edit all the stuff properly because you got to do it justice.
That's it. I've said enough nice things now.
Thank you. It's appreciated.
That moment is over.
Look who's here. It's Dave Levinson. Hello, Levinson. Everyone.
Good morning. How are you, Gareth?
I'm good. How are you?
Don't worry. We also ran out of stuff to say towards the end of our show. It happens.
I'm not running out of stuff to say. I wanted to ask you about the squirting orgasm last week.
You mean hers?
Oh, you had your own.
No, you know, nice. The nice thing is when you turn about 98, all of your orgasms are like that. But you can't plan them. It just happens when you're in your wheelchair and your colostomy bag just fills up. I'm squirting.
Now, Dave, I heard that you and Eric filmed it and were selling DVDs that Friday afternoon.
And William Nickel.
Yeah.
Yeah. But a lot of that stuff was my own personal stuff. Do you know what? Just warn a guy. You know what I mean? Say, hey, Dave, get some towels. I got good Egyptian cotton, man. I don't have that stuff happening.
Tell me something. What's the status of the show at the moment? Who's in charge? Because it's like, it's three of you now?
There's Brandon, who's he's the normal one. He has a real job.
Yeah.
And then Eric, who has aspirations of being on 5FM one day.
Oh, really? Is that what he wants?
I let him talk to you for
10
minutes.
He wants to go backwards.
And you take him down easily. So you let him. Shame he's young. He's impressionable. And then I don't know who's in charge.
Didn't Eric just get a nomination for some award?
Eric has been nominated for Comics Choice Newcomer of the Year. Which I think part of that is we have a nominee.
Yeah, but
Toomey used to be on the show. She's had 3 nominations.
Yeah, but think about Eric. You know, I want to support him and congratulate him, but whenever he's in the media, he never mentions Cliff Central. Not
once. Guess what? We had a meeting yesterday, and I said, my boy, if you're on ENC Africa, you say, oh, and by the way, I have a podcast on Cliff Central, which you can download an app very easily.
If he doesn't do that, taught him. If he doesn't do that, then I'll get Jonty to perform a different kind of activity.
But that's my point, Gareth. Is that Eric comes every week. He dines out on our free coffee. He watches Squirting Orgasms. And he can't even give us a mention.
Give us a plug.
Can you put that in the contract? Have you seen Jonty's forearms? That is a...
He's got like Popeye arms. Like a longshoreman, right?
On a serious note, he did notice something. One of the ladies in our audience said, guys, please note, this takes time. This isn't just a
yes,
a
quick that's thing. Right.
So I'm saying to the ladies, like, work your shit out, man. Hurry up. Get this.
You think it's inefficient?
In woman's life.
Yeah, nice.
Listen, I have an orgasm in about 8 minutes.
Ben. I know, but like, I noticed that you were part of the studio orders, but then you were very hot and like panicked, and you disappeared twice at least.
I had a meeting with my painter.
God, all right, enough talking to you has just been the most boring part of my morning.
Oh, wow. Oh, look, there's Eric.
It's been the most awkward part of my
morning.
Hey,
Eric, listen, congrats on your nomination, dude. Yeah, well done. That's very nice
thank
work.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right. What are you going to do with the money?
I don't know yet. I haven't decided yet. It's between buying another golf and supplementing the family whorehouse. One of the two.
All right. It's beautiful.
That's
the greatest show. It's coming up next. Just in case you hadn't had enough, everybody. That's the Just Now Comedy Podcast coming up on cliffcentral.com next. We call them our moral compass.
Our moral compass.
That's right.
Our moral compass.
That's them. It's fantastic. All right, we're out of here. Let's get out and clear some space for these people. We will see you on Monday between 6 and 9. Have an excellent weekend. And if anything exciting happens, make sure you take documentary evidence because we'll need to see it to believe it.
Including bumping into Justice Malala
at
the lounge.
Please, if you bump into Justice Malala, don't ask him if he's Justice Malala. Just go up and say, hey, Justice, and take a picture.
Yeah, straight away. We should reward people for taking Justice selfies.
Correct. All right, everybody, thank you. Here's the unnews. Atul Gupta says he's proudly South African, and there should be no doubt about this. He says to prove it this weekend, he's having a braai with his friends at the Saxonwold Shebeen to cheer on the Golden Cheetahs in the Super Rugby final, hoping they score lots of goals against the Cash Crusaders. This weekend, ANC MPs are being wined and dined around the country, with lavish gifts also being spread across the ranks. This has nothing to do with next week's motion of no confidence vote with Jacob Zuma in Parliament. Absolutely unrelated. So unrelated, it really shouldn't even be thought of. I don't know why I mentioned it. Finally, Vernon Philander is still not 100% fit after his stomach problems last week at the Oval. He spent so much time on the toilet during the third test that he now has back spasms going into the fourth test. Protea's medical team have their work cut out for them, though, as there's still a lot of gas in Big Vern's system, which massage tends to release. All right. Ciao, everybody.
This is CliffCentral.com.